Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. Sorry about last week. The week kind of got away from me, and after building up such a huge amount of podcasts where I was just so organized, the weekend kind of snuck up on me, and so I never got a podcast up last week, so I really apologize about that. We do have an amazing episode to make up for it this week, though, with Tony Cantwell, Irish comedian, kind of blowing up online, and I've never met him, and just kind of been watching his career grow online and just seeing different people sort of getting excited about him. So I used a podcast invitation to get to know him, and I have to say, lovely guy, super funny, and it's very much just a getting to know Tony chat. But I think for our Irish listeners, it's going to be quite exciting because you probably know who he is. For our non-Irish listeners, it's still super funny. We talk about we talk a little bit about online content and sort of that whole world of stand-up versus online stuff, and talk a little bit about Tony having a kid. We have a really funny chat about getting married and voiceover work. It's just a fun kind of two comics chatting. It doesn't really have a theme. And I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed getting to know him. So enjoy the episode. Don't forget, leave 5 stars on iTunes. Hit me up on Instagram at Des Bishop, patreon.com/Des Bishop. Don't forget to subscribe. Month of May, still going strong. So other than that, we will be back at the end of the episode to say goodbye. Enjoy Tony Cantwell. By the way, is it okay if we just start?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, just because... you have a I've noticed this from watching your videos, but I'm really noticing it now just by the virtue of looking at you and your sort of recording situation. You have a natural kind of radio slash voiceover voice.
Thank you very much. It's been actually good for voiceovers. Do you do voiceovers? Do you get the odd voiceover?
You know, over the years, I was in for them, but in Ireland, I think the problem was when I did a few. I did one for Nivea for Men.
Oh, nice.
Nivea for Men aftershave balm for men who dare to care, which actually used to play in Lansdowne Road like at halftime of rugby matches.
Oh, nice.
But it wasn't like Des Bishop promotes Nivea, but it might as well have been because...
Yeah, just you can't keep your anonymity with that, I suppose.
And also, as you know from doing voiceovers, it's a business very much of your own natural voice. So my natural voice is... a New Yorker. So I was never, it was always going to have to be, we need an American. So I didn't do a lot.
Can you not do those, like, you know, those, do you ever hear on Irish radio? It's like FM 104. And it's like, who's this American guy? Why are we so obsessed with getting the American dude to, like, you know, classic FM? Like, who's this guy? You know, it's all work. Could have been you.
It was never me, honestly. And
should have been.
There was one guy very recently, actually. I feel like Liberty Mutual commercials or something.
Right. Yeah.
And I kept getting accused of being the Liberty Mutual guy or whatever company it was. I can't remember, but it wasn't me. And I was like, why do people keep saying that? And then I heard it, and I was like, holy shit, that's me! Literally, I don't know if maybe the guy was doing like a me impersonation.
Yeah. So it's fun, though. It's fun doing the voiceovers. I like. I've got a couple on at the moment. At the moment, I'm a talking pint of Smithix. I am a genie that comes out from a nasal spray called Otravini, the nose genie. And my line in that was, "Your nose called me for help." And then this genie comes out of a nasal spray.
Are they all okay with you talking about it? Like, there's no.
Oh, I don't know, actually. I think it's, you know.
No. I'm just curious because it's funny, but I wonder: are you supposed to keep that sort of like?
I don't know. You know, the magic. I'm working on a couple of things at the moment. I can't really talk about it, but I might be an upcoming slice of bread in a commercial. So,
no, it's great, but it's noticeable because you know my sort of former podcast partner, who's now too busy because he's. In bloody the Trinity, he's in the Trinity Access program. He also has a great natural voice. I mean, some people just have it. There's nothing you can do. You either you're born with it or you don't.
I found definitely that my voice has allowed me because I transitioned from like just doing videos, having done no real live performances. When I started doing live performances, I found people would tolerate me. Like I did this gong show that was in London. Like I don't know if it's called the Comedy Store, or Comedy Cellar, not the Comedy Cellar. Could be the Comedy Store in London, but they had this gong show and they let people up. And I actually got away with doing like 2 minutes before anyone even laughed because I think people were waiting. They assumed that there was a presence here, that I was getting somewhere. And then when they realized I was getting nowhere, the gong and I was...
Oh, you got gonged? Yeah, I think Monday. Is that like back. Monday nights in the Comedy Store or something, that gong?
Yeah, it is, you know. But like I went with a friend of mine and he got like 15 seconds, you know, and... And I think like when you have, I think having a voice that people are like, and then they're like, actually, no, not funny. But they give you a bit more time.
You're like, you were like the Headspace guy to them for a while. They were just happy to relax.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's begin in the usual way. So, well, actually, it's funny. I feel like the need for a gong show is kind of gone. Like, I feel like the whole concept of a gong show was for people that would go on to be trolls. Before you could be a troll, you would not have the balls to do comedy. You would then go to a gong show where you could just like an acceptable heckling show where you could just be horrific at people who are doing what you want to do.
And now you can just be an egg on Twitter and be an anti-Semite. You know what I mean? Rather than just a floating egg. It's like, I know you're not an egg, bro. Why are you saying that stuff to me?
Yeah, and I know that you're running at 6 or 7 of these accounts.
Yeah, totally.
To be honest, how I got to know about you was some of my own fans, like younger fans, were like, do you know Tony Cantwell? And I hadn't been aware of you up to then. And, you know, then I checked out, you know, the stuff that you're doing online, and you're very much, you're kind of killing it in the sort of online content game.
Yeah, well, it's fun. It was a thing where like when I started putting videos out online, like I really wasn't expect. It was when I'd kind of given up doing comedy. I tried to do comedy in London for a while, and I found myself just getting in my own way. You know, you just kind of feel like, what's my thing? And you know, the kind of people go out and they're like, oh, I know what you're thinking. You know, like it wouldn't work for me, but a guy was like, I know what you're thinking, Pakistani Jeff Goldblum, but he looked like a Pakistani Jeff Goldblum. You know what I mean? But I didn't really have that thing. So yeah. I would be like making all these weird kind of Irish jokes that weren't really true to myself. And I wasn't really getting anywhere with it. So I kind of gave up on comedy. And then it was only just putting videos out. I was like, I just want to put things out that I think will just be disposable. You know, they'll just disappear off people's feed really quick on Instagram. And it's just... You know, you look back, it's like when you really just take the pressure off yourself, you can actually tap into what you'd find funny. And that's what I was finding funny. And then I just haven't really, well, I haven't kept the same pace, but I haven't really stopped since then, about 8 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting because the journey is the same in the sense that it just takes time, right?
Yeah.
But it's funny how you felt less pressure with the videos and you were able to find your voice that way. I mean, I do think that's one of the wonders of content, because obviously some of the comics are very negative. They're like, oh, he's just a fucking content guy. And they're very dismissive of it. But it's like, but this is another way to be funny. And it's totally fine if that's where you find your voice.
What I find really interesting about it as well is like what I found a bit difficult kind of transitioning into doing live stuff. And I've had it with other people who do, you know, Instagram or Facebook, you know, videos, is that, you know, the kind of the jokes kind of come hard and fast in a video, and you're not really accounting for anyone to you're not counting for the rhythm of the laughs. You're kind of counting just throw everything at it.
Yeah.
And some people will find this bit funny, and some people will find this bit funny. You know, it's not about kind of layering.
Thank you for professionally ignoring my dog barking there.
That's okay. Yeah,
he's a very old dog that barks at passersby. It's his only joy.
Oh,
but,
yeah,
but the rhythm is different. You know, definitely. But at the same time, he'll stop in a sec. But at the same time, isn't it great that you did want to do live performance?
And sure, yeah.
Being able to find your voice online has brought you back to that, even though I don't know, was that your end game or not?
Well, I've kind of always wanted to, I think it's kind of why I love the Eurovision so much, because it's like perfect for like a child of divorce like myself. It's been a look at how big of a spotlight this person has, you know? And I just always, I kind of always was chasing that and wanted to do kind of live gigs. And I was always like cracking jokes in school and that sort of thing. But, It was just kind of more so, I wasn't even considering going back to it. But then when you kind of, and I used to hate myself, not hate myself, but be down on myself for kind of like, quote unquote, skipping the queue, you know, like not doing the whole having the 5 minutes to then having that perfect and then having the 10, the 15 and then 40 minutes. If it even gets to that really in Ireland, which really it's like 20 minutes and you have a, you know, a couple of good 20 minutes and then you kind of go around to different places, you know, they know you in Cork, they know you in Galway. And I didn't, you know, have that. But what I did have was the audience who would come see me. Hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm maybe not honing the skills in the same way, but I do get to then skip it and give people what I find funny, what they find funny, you know?
Yeah, but I just find that the business has evolved.
Yeah.
And, you know, this concept of skipping the queue, first of all, I feel like it's classic sort of Catholic guilt, you know, like some nonsensical shame that you would like, I'm sorry for being successful. Like, I'm sorry that it turns out that I nailed the content game and now people want to see me. But also, like, the industry has just changed. This is one of the ways to get your audience. You know, do you end up missing out on some, you know, live performance development? Probably yes. But then on the flip side, do you gain, you know, some sort of like multimedia skills that the comedian that came up through the ranks will never have, you know, like it's just it's a different skill set.
And I've definitely noticed, I mean, there's comedians I was seeing every week, you know, in like pubs and in comedy clubs in Dublin. And when you kind of forget that there's people on social media and you haven't seen them in a while, you know, and I just haven't heard from them. I haven't heard from so many kind of comedians, and I have no idea what other kind of comedians are doing at the moment who don't kind of have, you know, the outlet of a kind of.
Well, it didn't suit the live performers, right? I mean, it didn't suit me, but that's fine. I was happy to take some time off. I've been doing it a long time, but
yeah,
the people that their output is live performance, obviously it didn't suit them. I mean, I was going to ask you this anyway. Like, do you feel that the pandemic kind of suited you to be able to sort of grow what you do, or you still would have been better off to be able to continue doing live stuff as well as what you're doing?
I mean, it probably would have. I mean, I was hoping I was literally just talking to my agent about this, and he was kind of saying that by September you should have had 3 Edinburghs under your belt, you know, and I have 1 Edinburgh under my belt, and then the other one was cancelled, and then this is likely not going to be happening, you know. So the kind of trajectory of, you know, potentially doing, you know, I really want to do Vicar Street, you know. And I remember actually like potentially being booked for Vicar Street, and, you know, Bren, who's very sound in Aiken, he was kind of like, look, I'm, you know, I think, you know, you have a talent there, but I think if you wait a while and you kind of hone it, I really think you'll have a really strong Vicar Street if you kind of wait and come back, you know. And so I was kind of hoping to do like 3 Edinburghs and then have a really strong kind of feel fairly bulletproof and do Vicar Street as a kind of like a big show, you know. So there's elements of that, but what it's meant, like I had a baby in May of last year.
You did. Congratulations.
And thank you. Yeah, so he's like 1, like coming up to 1 in the next couple of weeks. So it was kind of like when the gigs were getting canceled, I was like, I need to have something coming in. I need to figure out what it is. And in setting up like a Patreon and doing an extra podcast every single week, you know, I have for the first time ever a regular income, like more regular than I ever had doing the kind of live gigs, you know. So it did suit me because I was able to do that and able to figure out how to edit the podcast and get them all out and get that content out. So it did suit me, but in terms of the kind of like improving my talent, financially it did kind of balance out.
Yeah, yeah, because I noticed that, like Joanne McNally and a few other people that were just about to pop, which I put you in that category of of, you know, just breaking out, people knowing who you are. It was unfortunate timing, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, and it's also really interesting because there's been so much more people kind of doing the content stuff and doing the live video or the online videos. So it's kind of like now, I mean, it's like Ireland's comedy seems to be online. I mean, there's so many incredibly talented people like Sean Burke and, you know, Justine Stafford and Michael Fry and these guys.
There's this other kid I saw the other day, Shane Smith or something. Or he was doing a call with, as if it was like Mary talking to somebody on the phone.
Byrne. Yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah. It was funny.
He's brilliant. And there's some like, and it's just so, it kind of, it's not necessarily competitive because what would we ever be fighting over? It's comedy in Ireland. It's online comedy in Ireland. It's not like there's like a resource that we're all fighting for, you know, and RTE aren't necessarily, you know, but, so there's definitely no direct competition or hate or anything like that. But it's also like, oh, wow, everyone's really stepped the level up into online sketches. And so it really makes you feel like this is not just some like, oh, I'll just, you know, shoot something in, you know, in my bathroom like I used to do, you know, and just put it out there. It's really made me feel to kind of step up that level of comedy.
Yeah. Which I have to say that, you know, I think a lot of people think it's easy. You know, I think a lot of people are dismissive of somebody who blows up online. And like for myself, like every now and then I get a like a burst of energy to do a bit of online shit. And you know, one or two are good, but very quickly I'm like over it. Like I find it very difficult. Yeah. It's a lot of work and it's like it's nonstop. It's really much more like having a full-time job than my stand-up career ever was. And I think that needs to get out there a bit more, that this is not fucking easy. Online content is a pain in the hole.
But it gets a bit easier if you kind of view it like this is just a daily blog post and it's going to be gone forever. And if it comes back and if people like it again and reference it again, and if it blows up or if it doesn't necessarily perform well, but you just kind of have to, which is something I haven't necessarily been doing recently, has been consistent with it. But the people that are consistent with it, just the get out of their way and the fog is gone, and then they create some real magic, you know. It's just like that necessity to have to get it out is what makes gold.
And I guess the good news is, unless you do something inappropriate or cancelable, that a dud doesn't hurt like dying on stage. Like a dud vid is just a dud vid.
Yeah.
It's not, it is. Like the hazard is low.
The hazard is very low. The only thing is that you're kind of, I mean, I used to think like, okay, we have like a finite amount of jokes and we need to spread them out across our lifetime. And obviously that's not true.
You have a child.
you have a child
and you have a new half an hour just like that.
I know. That's how I sold it to my wife, you know, like, please, I'm running on empty here. But like, so when you kind of have a sketch and it's out, and like, you haven't got paid for it, you know, you haven't, this is not part of like a live show. It's not part of like an audiobook or your life story or anything like that. That's a sketch it's kind of gone. It's an idea. It's not a movie you can now, well, maybe you can make, but like, you know what I mean? So I think that's with the comedians, a lot of time you're like, oh no, I need to hang on to this. This is in my notes. This is my precious thing that I need to fine tune and get better. And the online stuff is all like, this is the best I can do this week. And then next week, that's what I can do this week. And I think it's just different parts of the brain, you know?
And, you know, I know I'm like buddies with Chris DiStefano over here and other comics that have kids. I feel like after they have kids, they become a lot more focused and a lot more professional about the job. Have you found that having a child has made you think about all this in a very different way?
Yeah, definitely. Kind of it's... Just because I don't have any time. It would be the same as if I had a terminal illness. I would just be like, I don't have time. I don't have time for like, maybe will we figure out if we're doing something or not? It's like, no, are we doing something? You know, who's the producer? You know, are we going to do it or are we not going to, you know, how can we action? What's the next actionable task we can take on this spitballing of ideas? And just kind of, I can't just go to work and have a wank anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like I have, like this is, you know, I have to use the time that I have in the best possible way.
Have you leaned in on the kid stuff? I just in the stuff that I've seen, I haven't seen a lot. I didn't know you had a kid, for example.
Yeah, well, I kind of kept it off social media just because I don't know. I kind of wanted, you know, I I talk about them a lot on my podcast, but you know, without going into too much detail. But I haven't really kind of lent in on the kind of. I do find dad jokes more funny, and I do find like podcasts about parenting more relatable and funny than I did. And I'm not making. I'm a bit softer. But no, not necessarily.
So, do you find that the online life is more stressful for your mental health? Actually, let me preface this by saying that I've found, like, just over the years, as social media has become more and more important, that my anxiety around my job has increased exponentially. And even at my most sort of famous / eyes of the media on me periods, it was never as stressful as, you know, Twitter becoming more important and just online commentary and the need to ignore that, but at the same time, the need to engage in social media and the fact that, you know, your mental health and the all that stuff collides.
Yeah. No, it is definitely a balance. I kind of wish there was just like a one-way Instagram where I could just send and not kind of see, you know. And I found it, like, I was talking about this in my podcast recently over a year ago where I'd done like a load of gigs. I'd done like three gigs in the Sugar Club, and I'd done them like three nights in the Sugar Club in Dublin. And I was walking back from the gig, and I was just getting the Lewis home, and I looked on Instagram, and I saw another comedian who I really, you know, admire, young enough comedian who had just done, just headlined, you know, the Comedy Cellar, and, you know, had done a good gig, and it was like a kind of photo that you take after the gig. And I was all like, look at that person gigging now. I'm a piece of shit. And I was literally walking home from having done three gigs on the trot, three like sold out gigs on the trot. And I'm like, I'm a piece of shit. Why am I gigging right now? And I caught myself. You know, you just have this feeling and you're like, I'm going to think, no, that's not. And not to say that, you know, I'm not trying to say that I was doing one up, or just what your mind can do if you just see anyone else doing something you're not doing right there and then, you know, it can just make you feel kind of less than. So I have to just, I found myself a couple of weeks ago annoyed that I couldn't remember what annoyed me about something I saw on social media, you know, and I was annoyed being like, what was that pissed me off? Did I see someone else do something? Did I see someone having a holiday or something like that? And I was annoyed that I couldn't figure it out, and I just had to, you know, kind of put it away. But I don't know if that's, it's just all about balancing it anyway, you know. It's not necessarily just going on any kind of social media too. That's why I actually really like TikTok, because it's not anyone kind of saying, look at what I have. It's just like, what bullshit nonsense, what junk food can I just show you for like 15-30 seconds, you know? And that's my vibe totally.
Yeah, which is great. Of course it can be sometimes my frustration is, why the fuck do people love this? But that's just, I think I just showing my age half the time, you know? But like, I don't begrudge anybody, other than like four good-looking 18-year-old ripped dudes like dancing in front of the camera and becoming hugely famous. I struggle with that.
Yeah, I struggle with, and they're like showing their like sexy silhouettes, you know. There's a real trend to like, of lads like pulling off balaclavas, being like, what would you do if I came in your window? I'm fucking shoot you, bro. Like, that's not cool.
I'd like to think that, you know, in my mind, I go, you know, that wasn't around when I was 18. If I was 18, I would have been on camera showing off my body. But I remember being 18 and thinking that I was in the worst shape of my life and having deep self-hatred, and I never would have had the confidence. Now when I look back at pictures when I was 18, I was like, holy shit, I was ripped. But in my mind, I was in terrible shape.
Yeah, me too. Like, I look back at pictures and I have like a V, and I'm not an athlete. I've never done anything like that. I've never been active, but like, I just had a natural V just from walking around being 16-year-old with metabolism, natural V. And I'm like, oh, don't look at me, you know, like fringe down emo hat, you know.
I know, but where does this fucking confidence come from with these guys?
I don't know. I think it's because they don't drink as much. I think the fear just does not encroach in the same way. You know, it's just a bit of lack in the fear.
Yeah, I think also probably like they've they've been aware of. I'm sure it has deeper psychological consequences that we don't know behind the scenes. But I guess when you're just in front of the camera the whole time, you've become confident. Obviously, they put a ton more effort into their bodies than I ever did, too. You know,
totally. And also, they're so much more familiar with. I mean, even MySpace and the whole MySpace angle. You know, of like up here where everything looks skinny was like a revelation back in what 2006 or whatever. But now it's like, it literally is like, I'll become a persona just for this TikTok or this video, and then I'll do it 100 times, and then like this is what they'll be saying, like, and then they release it. So they've perfected how to make it look like this is my life all the time. This is the angle. This is the beach. This side of the beach that looks good. The other side of the beach looks like trash. Like, they know all of what goes through that lens.
And how old are you?
I'm 33.
Oh, yeah, 33. So you're a millennial, right? You're not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Proud millennial.
Yeah. Because but I think you have a lot of Gen Z following.
Yeah, I think I do. Well,
I feel like they relate to you.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of because a lot of it just is a lot of my things are just junk food and they're short, and I have a short attention span as well. You know, like if someone shows me a video and they're like, look, it's 8 minutes, watch to the end. And I'm like, get that fucking boomer shit out of my face. You know what I mean? Like, I think people.
I'm very anti. I've actually been getting good. I've been getting good mileage since we came back because we've been gigging. I'm already back gigging a month.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I'm getting good mileage out of being angry at the boomers for the fact that I'm being accused of being one. So I'm very anti the fact that boomer has, basically encompasses late millennials all the way through to people at their fucking funeral today.
Yeah, happy no, it really that. Has. It's kind of anyone. It's okay, boomer, and that's even the most boomer thing
to
say.
It's kind of past now anyway.
It is, but what I'm loving now, I'm loving the Gen Zers just laying into millennials being like, you know, why do you think we give a shit about what Hogwarts house you're from? Like, they hate Harry Potter, you know, they hate Lord of the Rings.
They hate side partings.
Tight jeans, you know, and I love it. Like, you know, there was a great one. It's like, why do millennials always talk about smoking weed by saying, do you partake? I'm like, yeah, we do. I don't know why we do.
But and I do just, feel, I well, the joke, of course, is I say I'm a Gen X, which is like there's just no hate generated at the Gen X, really. We're kind of a forgotten generation. But on a side note or a funny note, I can't remember. I do remember, obviously, there was some Gen X hate for millennials, for sure. There was a bit of like millennial dismissal. That is a fact, undeniable. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember any hate going up. Like there is from Gen Zs at millennials.
No, I don't think so. I think it's just because I think just millennials are just, I mean, you can imagine like Gen Zers weren't like out pasting the world with tweets. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like they kind of just kind of kept to themselves, you know, had a bit of an attitude and, you know, would kind of, you know, take down, like, you know, be critical of, you know, government and, you know, be a bit more kind of an activist.
But yeah, very activist.
You weren't pasting social media with, you know, Gen X kind of ideals. Gen Z is probably just sick of seeing, you know, laughing face emojis, you know, which they hate, apparently.
Oh, is that another object of their ire?
Apparently it's the most cringe. It has to be like skulls or coffins are related with death because it's like, oh, I'm dead. I'm laughing so much I died, you know.
Oh, is that their thing?
Yeah. So it's like a skull. So if you're, instead of like, if it's a really funny video, it might be like three skulls or three coffins or that sort of thing.
Oh, like dying?
Yeah, like I'm dying laughing.
Wow. Because I find that they even like, they get offended by my punctuation and stuff. like, well, I'm engaged to a millennial, but she complains to me that like I use periods too much or full stops too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a bad man for like when I had my Nokia 3310 and you know, you had like 160 characters per 30 cent text back in the day. Like yeah. I refused to do that kind of like short text speech. Yeah. So I would just rinsing through cash, but I was also quite, you know, quite a stickler for the punctuation.
Yeah. I write real sentences. I find that people, even Joanne McNally complains to me that like my texts are very like matter of fact or whatever. And I'm just like answering the question. I'm not.
Yeah.
I feel like it's offensive now to not put in at least one emoji of some description or
Yeah, I don't like emojis and emails. You know, I don't like, you know, I kind of want just the, I want the business, you know, I want the kind of, I don't know, because from working in sales, you know, where it was kind of like beaten out of us to be like, you can't have any kind of, all of my Irishness was kind of like, sorry, but do you mind if you would ever consider, if you would ever consider buying something? You know, it was just like, get to the point.
Also, you know, so they wipe that out of you, because I'm still like that.
Yeah, they kick the shit out of me for that sort of stuff. Like, you need to get that that Irishness out. But like, so I also think just in general, like emails don't have to be, emails are not flowery. Like we have the flowery stuff. We have, you know, we have comments under Instagram posts. We have WhatsApps, you know, emails can just be more to the point, you know,
yeah,
you should
funny,
see it in the subject
I feel
line.
Like, I feel like I missed out on all this etiquette because, you know, I got in stand-up in 1997. I was still in college, you know, I was still in my third year in UCC and I had never sent an email. That's my claim to fame. I never sent an email in college. My first email was after 1998.
Wow.
That was the first, so I never sent an email in college and I never typed a report. Everything I handed in was handwritten until my dissertation for history, which was, it had to be typed.
And, wow. Was that excruciating figuring all that out?
I can't even remember how I typed. I can't even remember. I think I may have dictated it to my mother. She was a professional typist.
Oh, well, then, look, I mean,
she was trained in the, you know, ASD. She had the official. So I, you know, she could really hammer it out.
Wow.
So I think I dictated it. But anyway, I digress. But I got into comedy and then like I had an agent and I've just like very rarely have I had to worry about the etiquette of emails and what's considered proper or not. So I feel like actually, other than the fact that I like to be grammatically correct on my texts, I feel like I'm not really that prepared for like the corporate world.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've had emails from people like, I've gotten bad news about like, you know, gigs being pulled or like someone going with a different actor for an audition, you know, and had like kind of smiley face emojis. And I'm like, don't. Give me that shit right now.
Give me that fucking shit. But the casting agent loves you.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need love. I need a fucking job.
Exactly, yeah. And look, get to the point. You know, I can take it, you know. And
well, thank God you're not in the States. I mean, the States is really bad with that shit. You know, the fucking, the fake praise and like, oh, they love you. And then you never hear from them again.
Yeah. We went to... if part of actually our sales incentive was we went to Vegas as a sales incentive from London to Vegas, and we had 36 hours in Vegas. It was just the weekend, and we had to be back. So by the time we arrived, it was 4 o'clock, like our time, and then whatever, like, you know, just starting Vegas on like 11 or something like that a.m. So like we hadn't slept, and we started a whole day. We saw David Guetta twice, which was part of the incentive. This is the sort of
it was
startup
like a, like
I was
like
working
a pool
for.
Party thing.
Yeah, we went to like two David Guetta pool party, which I have to admit, I'll be honest, you don't get David Guetta until you're in a pool listening to David Guetta, I have to admit.
with a bunch of fucking, with your sales team.
Yeah, with my big buff sales team, I'm there wearing a t-shirt in the pool, you know, the pool party. But I couldn't, like, I obviously expected the tipping thing, but what I didn't expect was I ordered like a Caesar salad, and the cheapest thing was a Caesar salad for like $46 at the hotel right. Pool. And then I got the Caesar salad and I walked over, and the lady, the waitress was very nice and was all like, hi, sir, you can come back here and collect it. So I came back and I paid my $46 exactly to collect it from where it was at the kitchen. I had to walk over to the kitchen to get it. And then I handed it back and she goes, and it just dropped. As soon as she saw that it was no tip, she was like, sir, if you're actually not going to give a tip, can you just draw a line through this box where it says tip? And she was so cross with me. And I was kind of like, but the only thing we did was tell me that it was here. Like, I'm over here, you know, I would have given you a tip, but all you did was say, excuse me, it's over here. You know, but like it was so pleasant up until that point, you know.
So the classic European clash of culture there, the tip. But that is a great discussion. Is like, why? Because in the States, it's still expected that you would tip in that situation, and it's like, what are you doing for me that I'm tipping this?
I mean, I suppose I now kind of understand more of the kind of. I understand the fact that they get taxed, you know, be taxed on the tips. I learned that from Reservoir Dogs, where Steve Buscemi's talking about how waitresses' tips get taxed and he hates tipping. So I understand that, and I understand it's not a lot of money, and a lot of time it's minimum wage. But I tell you what, I love it in Japan, where there's like no tip. In fact, they'll chase you down the street to give you back your tip.
Yeah, because it's like they're losing face.
Yeah, exactly. But similarly, I was in like a Uniqlo there in Japan. Sorry, I know I'm jumping all over the place, but
that's fine. I'm very comfortable with that.
But I was in a Uniqlo in Japan, and they were just like very nicely being like, just to let you know, it's 7:55 and we close at 8. And they were like, you know, and they were like, you know, everyone, like they were singing, they had all these group songs to kind of keep morale, and everyone was so pleasant and folding things immaculately. And my wife was still in the changing room at 8:01. And they went over to the changing room like, because it's like, we're cool to a point, but if you break the rules, they're like, I cannot understand your feeble European brain to understand the basic, these are the rules.
Yeah, the disrespect, but that's a disrespect. You're not respecting.
It is a disrespect, yeah.
They're showing you respect. Why are you not reciprocating this respect?
Yeah.
It's unacceptable.
And they don't get, we also went to this like robot cafe, and we like rocked up late, and like, I just had to plead with the guy. He was like, no, you can't go in. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get a refund. No, no, like it's gone. You didn't come. And he couldn't understand why I might think that I can go to like a later show or they'll pay for a later show. And then I was just drunk and begged, please, we have to see these robots, please. It's our last day in Japan. And he eventually let me.
You got married pretty young, no?
Yeah, well, three years ago. Oh, 3 years
30,
ago.
I guess these days. I mean, I'm 45. I'm not married yet, so I'm not a good gauge on what's a normal time to get married. But
yeah, are you looking forward to it? Are you looking forward to the wedding?
Oh, you know, honestly, it's a good question. Thank you for asking me a question. it's not something I've discussed publicly that much, but actually, it's a fine thing to discuss.
That's fine. Well, I can preface it by saying that I had a great time at my wedding. I was looking forward to my wedding, but I realized that the wedding is not about you. Not about you at all. And it's not even about her or him. It's really just kind of like, for all, you know, just this is the thing that we did. This is just the saving face. The families are meeting, you know.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it. So I was very into getting engaged. We met, we fell in love very quickly, and we had a very intense, you know, she moved in October, met in July, moved in October, and just like a sense of divinity about our pairing, you know?
Yeah.
So I was very into all that. And then I was very into just getting engaged, like, fuck it, in for a penny, in for a pound, go for it. I wasn't really getting engaged thinking about getting married.
I like, totally know what you mean. Know what you mean.
So,
because I remember when I proposed, I was like, oh, this is great. And then all of a sudden, it's this private, intimate, perfect moment when you propose. And then all of a sudden, it balloons out. And you're like, we have to tell everyone, like, oh, shit, what? This was like, I kind of just wanted this to be our thing for a while.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, like, the minute the proposal was over, we started talking about weddings, and I was like, oh, fuck. You know, I wasn't thinking about the wedding part. I am into it. I will say that because both my parents are gone, it's kind of strange in that, you know, there's a lot of wedding prep, but it's definitely more exciting for her. I mean, I think it's more exciting for the woman anyway. And I'm not a Debbie Downer about the wedding, but I would happily go to Las Vegas tomorrow, get married. I'd be really happy. Like, I want to be married to her. Having a wedding is not like my top priority. In saying that, I am looking forward to the wedding, but it is, it's just kind of, you know, it's weird where like the main sort of family that you'd be thinking about aren't around. So you're like, you're talking to your aunts about it and stuff like that. It's almost like rent a family to try to have a sense of
exactly.
This big wedding.
A lot of pressure on your brother as well.
Yeah, my two brothers. And, you know, well, luckily he's another late one that, you know, is not in the marriage game. But yeah, no, I am very excited. Originally, we were going to go super quick and go for this summer, but that plan fell through. So we're going for May 2022. So that's kind of nice. How do you think about this? We're going to get married on Friday the 13th.
Oh, nice.
Are you superstitious?
Bold. I mean, is that not you just being like, look, tell me it can't happen. We're going to do it. We're going to prove everyone wrong. This is forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally just down to the practicality of the day, you know, like
the cheapest.
Well, yeah, that's what I've been accused of that already. That I the few people I've told, they're like, "Why, did you get a deal on that?" It's like, no, actually, it just turns out to be like of the available dates. This is the this is the most practical date for us.
And are you going
to
fly on your honeymoon on 9/11 as well? just doing it all by the cheapest day.
Yeah. So we had a discussion about it, like, because it becomes a conversation then, right? It becomes like a thing. But it was kind of unanimous amongst everybody that's in our decision circle that none of us really cared. And actually, like, there's something kind of fun about the fact that it's like a unique date. But maybe in actual fact,
you can include some other, like maybe you can walk down the aisle under some ladders and then like smash a glass wrapped in like, hey, smash a mirror.
It'd be a black cat. We won't have a flower girl, we'll have a black cat. Just walk, walk up the aisle.
Yeah. It's
What else is unlucky? Fucking not having a mask.
Yeah, not having a mask. Or you could do it the other way. You could have a load of birds shit on you when you get down there, balance it out for some good luck.
Yes, for some good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll break a mirror. We'll break him in. We'll have the priest in front of him. Like, the priest will be revealed when we smash the mirror. Well, we're not having a priest, but the celebrant.
A celebrant. I'm a celebrant. I've done a couple of weddings.
Really?
I've done three of my friends' weddings. I love it. It's great. It's great having someone. It's I don't know if you have someone that you know personally, but it's great.
Yeah, we have a guy.
We got a guy. He's the best.
He's a judge. But he's a friend of their family.
No, it's good to get someone that you kind of know, because it's a nice role to integrate what your friend, because like it's all very for your family a lot of the time. And I think, you know, you kind of want to hear your friends. You want more input from your friends. So that's what I do. I always go to the friends of the couple and try and integrate kind of well wishes from friends and family, specifically into the thing.
As a celebrant, is it on you to come up with the stuff, or like they give you stuff?
Yeah, no, on me. Like, so what I do is the mad thing is I just had to take like the only thing I knew, which is like a Catholic wedding, and then just kind of like chop and change. So instead of, you know, a reading from whatever, it's like, you know, it was like Nick Cave lyrics. If it was a song, it was just a friend maybe playing the guitar rather than having a hymn. But it was kind of like beat for beat the whole.
Oh, you followed the formula?
Follow the formula, and then just kind of chopped and changed. And then, you know, you got the friend bit, you got the family bit, you know, close it all off. What song do you want to dance down? You know, and then it's great.
Are most of the people when you're officiating, is it always at the venue?
Yeah. So it's at the venue. Now,
in Ireland, it has to be, right? In Ireland, it has to be in a specific spot, right? It can't just be like we're getting married on the beach.
Well, you see, so what I've kind of been is not like the legal celebrant, like they
go
to the office and they do all that and they sign all the bits, but then they have I've been part of like the ceremony, you know. Yeah.
But did you do the course? Are you like an official celebrant?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think my subscription of the online one, the Church of like New Humanism or something, has expired. Like my little card that I have.
Oh, right.
So I've just more so been kind of the ceremonial one. But it's great because you can set a mood, and you can set a mood that's kind of like, because we're so used to in Ireland being like, can I clap now? You know?
Yeah.
Or the kind of, so all the weddings have kind of been like, yep, the fuck you, you know? And it's been great. Like people just shouting from the back.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, our celebrant is a judge in real life, so I would assume he'll be somewhat like officious. Is that the word? You know, but he is like an Irish American guy, and he's got a good sense of humor.
That's great. But bring the gavel.
So what did you do for yours?
For my wedding, we had this lovely kind of country house, and we did it in it was in December, and we did it in like a barn. And it was like on the like winter solstice. So we hung a load of like a weird like kind of Wiccan looking ribbons and stuff like that. Not that either of us are Wiccans or
pagans.
Witches. Exactly. Yeah. No. So, but it was fun. It was like in a barn. We had a friend of ours. He'd wrote a poem. And yeah, it was cool. It was just like in this kind of barn, and everyone had like mince pies and kind of mulled wine and into the house, load of cans. And
you didn't go for a banquet or anything?
No, we did. Yeah, no, we did. And that was nice. And to tell you, the key is two things: having a dance floor small enough that it can be filled. We found that's key for the band.
That's real practical advice.
Yeah. Yeah. So that you want, even if there's eight people on, you want to feel like that's kind of packed. So then when there's 30 people in, you're like, oh my God, like this is like,
it's rocking.
Yeah, and we had a really good band. We had a really good band called The Mixtape, and they played like the last song they played was Everlong by Foo Fighters, and everyone was like, and it was just, so it was like 35, 40 people in, it's probably more, probably like 70 people on the dance floor. And another thing is, don't have the bar in another room. My brother-in-law taught me that. Don't have the bar in another room, because otherwise people will congregate at the bar. They need to congregate in the room where the dance floor and the band are.
Right. Now, American weddings are a little different in that, like, the dancing and the eating is not separate. So like there's kind of like dancing in between courses and stuff generally at an American wedding. But it
finishes at a polite enough hour.
Yeah, it's very polite now. We're in a not a super fancy venue, but the venue is like a nice venue. But we're not going super fancy on a food. We're going for kind of like a barbecue vibe because it's on the beach.
Yeah.
But we're going for like barbecue. But the small dance floor is a huge... That's a huge bit of advice.
It's good. And, you know, you can treat it like an Edinburgh show. You can, like, cordon off the seats that people can't sit in, you know. I'll be like, no. It is sold out, but just move in here.
But it does feel like that a little bit. Like, both you know, because Hannah's in this game also. We both feel that it takes away a little bit from the prep in that, like, feels a bit like work.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
no, it can.
There's elements of it that are similar to what we do.
Yeah, no, there is. I mean, there's a performative element. I'm sure the expectation is that your speech that's going to, like, you know,
the fucking
gonna be the
speech,
funniest shit they've ever heard.
The speech pressure is huge, but I've already nailed like two eulogies, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Okay,
I'm feeling pretty good about
this.
My
will be now, yeah, okay.
I got a round of applause in the fucking church with my dead mom in a coffin. I mean, I'm fucking. If I can't nail my.
Yeah.
Do you know what's fucked up? Both my, like, people filmed both of our eulogies on their phones and sent them to me. That's like modern funerals. Like, yeah, check it out. I was like watching. I was like, oh, I didn't really nail that. I didn't really nail that bit. But there is a lot of pressure on this. Now, there's not as many speeches here. In Ireland, the speeches are a much bigger thing.
Yeah, and we had more where we, you know, we had the women do speeches as well. So it was even, you know, which it should be, you know, but we had like...
Yeah, I know the way you said. Well corrected there. It's like, oh, you know, we got to deal with the women. They're allowed
they
to
tend to, you know, if you're betting how long it's going to, no. So we, you know, the men, you know, I gave a speech. I had two best men as well, my brother and my cousin. My dad gave a speech, father of the bride, you know, maid of honor, my wife. So it was quite a lot, you know, but we kept them tight. My wife said, look, five minutes max.
Yeah. You know? When I was a best friend for my buddy's wedding in Ireland, actually, he was another one that couldn't decide like who was his best man. So all three in the wedding party, we split best man duties.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I was like emceeing the party, and then his brother gave the best man speech, and his other best friend did the rings, you know, handed the ring, you know what I mean? So we split the best man stuff. But I was hosting the like intro. And then I said, listen, the fucking speeches in Ireland, they go on forever. It's too long. I said, why don't we split them up? And I don't know why people don't do that more. So the father of the bride gave a speech literally before dinner, welcomed everybody, gave his speech after the appetizer. I think it was the best man after dinner, the maid of honor, whatever, you know, I can't remember how we did it, but we split it up throughout the night and it was way better. Cause I don't like this thing where people start betting on the amount of time the speech is, you know?
Yeah, or they do a kind of like pass the hat where it's every time the word thanks or like thanks to people and then you pass it on to the next. And it really, you know, thank you very much to the bridesman, then moves to the next person and whoever.
Oh, right. That's another. Yeah. See, I think all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I like the speeches, but you don't want to be like on the sixth speech. You know, it's like a gala, you know, it's like a TV gala.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, fuck, I'm on last, man.
You
know, they were great early on, but the crowd, they've gotten tired.
No, you know, they are. I find like they're more receptive the later and drunker, of course, that they get. You want to put someone, you know, the most confident, I suppose, first, and maybe the least confident last, because you not necessarily have to close it, but you just have to be like, they'll already be like,
yeah. So did you cry?
I wept. And not even in a kind of like, no, hang on a second. I was like, you know, like,
oh, really?
Squeaking. I squeak cried. Yeah. And also, I was like reading off my phone because I didn't print it off. So like people told me later on, they were like, you look like you were just dossing. You look like you were just like bored in the middle of your wedding.
I was
like,
checking your text.
Yeah, I'm not wasting paper, you know? So I was like reading my speech and
why did that only get 700 likes, man?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be a good day.
Because I always find like, you've been a celebrant a couple of times, but like, I always find like, I don't want to be that guy I don't want to be the guy that the person who works in the wedding industry knows the exact moment I'm going to cry. Like, I feel like everybody kind of cries at the same spot. And I know I'm going to be that guy. I know I'm going to hit that mark.
Yeah.
But I hate the fact that that's the case.
It's normally just, the big things are just normally as a kind of like, a very just hearing a very lovely kind of thoughtful thing from someone who doesn't normally say those things. That's the thing that'll bring the house down. Like, you know, like maybe the father of the bride who just has never really said, I'm so proud of you, you know, and you're like, that's what I'll get. He never says that normally, you know.
What made you cry from the speeches about you?
I think it was, I don't know. I just cried. I cried when I saw my wife walking down and there was like, we had a song that we really liked and that was, you know, our song and that kind of got me going. I think it was just the talks of like wanting to be with me, just like wanting to be with me forever. And that kind of element of it, you know, being like, oh, you really chose me. Those are the sort of things that got me.
That's nice though, isn't it? I mean, it's nice. It's fun to be cynical about it, as we've been a little bit sometimes in this conversation, but it's also nice to mark the, you know, how momentous it is and how emotional it is.
It is. And it's so rare to have to share that with people. Like, I feel like people normally only get that kind of like honest and raw with each other when it's like, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning in some random guy's kitchen, you know what I mean? Like but this is a much nicer way of like, you know, literally, and you know, everyone just gets to see it and know it. And, you know, what I found is great is just having parents say, oh, like relate back to like a friend of yours and then they know them from the wedding, you know, or something like that, or family members kind of knowing someone they don't know and just seeing, you know, when you see like when you were a kid and you saw like your parents chatting to like your mate's parents and you're like, oh, that's cool, that's badass, you know, like similarly, like seeing friends who don't know each other chat, you're like, oh, this is cool, that's like a, you know.
Yeah, it's nice to see people connect and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is like a wedding is like, you know, definitely a place where that goes down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all ahead for me.
Yeah. No, it'll be great. And are you doing anything for a honeymoon or is that just a
We haven't talked about that. It's weird because like, yeah, we haven't discussed that yet.
Yeah. Great.
I always wanted to, you know, in my mind, I wanted my honeymoon to be like a 3 month fucking like travel around South America, completely disappear thing.
Yeah,
that was always like more appealing to me than like going to the Maldives or something and just like having that kind of romantic chill out thing. So I don't know. It's because we're getting married in May. It's kind of like, I'm not, you know, we probably won't be dying to go away for too long, you know.
Yeah.
In the summer, but we'll, you know, we'll see. She's never been to Ireland. Who knows? I'm not going to go to Ireland for my fucking honeymoon. But
yeah, don't know.
We're thinking Sicily, maybe. We're thinking because her, you know, half her family originally come from Sicily. We'll see.
Oh yeah, great shout. Yeah, we kind of like focused on the honeymoon first, and like we spent like the budget on the honeymoon, and then it was kind of like recouping expenses. Like we even rushed into the wedding because we wanted to go on a honeymoon on like the 27th of December because just holiday days we could take. So we got, you know, I proposed, I think, in like May or June, and then we got married in December because it was just like, let's get this done now. And so like,
oh yeah, because you know, I nearly went that quick, and then our plan fell through. It's a long story, but yeah, we nearly went that quick. Yeah, no, we haven't thought about the honeymoon at all, actually. Yeah. Maybe I'm fucking up, man.
No,
doing it wrong.
No, things are going to be opening up. You won't want to go anywhere, you know. Well, it's already open more or less there, right?
Yeah, we're getting there now. So just before you go, so you are completely. You don't work in another job anymore, right?
No, I am. I was working in sales and then left, and you know they kind of I got offered like a nice kind of redundancy for that because I was moving over. So it was kind of a thing where like it was a redundancy that I could like live for 3 months or thereabouts on, and then I was like, right, I'm just gonna that's a blanket now that I have, or you know, a cushion to then focus on the comedy full time, and I did, and it's that's been the last 4-5 years. Yeah.
Oh, right. Five. Yeah. No, because that's why I was, when you were talking about the honeymoon there and you said the dates work with holidays and stuff. That's why I was thinking, were you still on the schedule then?
No, still, you know, but it's kind of weird. Like I get emails sometimes being like, I have a great bank holiday. But like, I'm not having a holiday.
Oh, dude.
I'm having a fucking anxiety attack.
Fucking bank holidays are such a nuisance for me. You know, like you had one the other day, right? In Ireland, it's not a bank holiday here. And I was fucking trying to get some shit done. I was like, it's a bank holiday. I'm like, oh, bollocks. I didn't realize, but I've been on a fucking holiday for 13 and a half months. Can we get some fucking work done here? I am aware that some people have still been living a Monday to Friday schedule, totally, whether they be parents or jobs. So I don't like to be completely dismissive of it. But.
Yeah.
Anyway, man, listen, thanks. That's great. You know, I didn't say beforehand, but, you know, I was hoping that we would just, you know, find shit to talk about. So that was ideal, right? You know, because I don't actually know that much about your life. So, but I didn't want to lean in on that because I just feel like, and I'm glad, I feel like you're the type of guy that will just try to find the humor and stuff. So I was.
No, it was a good job, man.
I was happy to indulge in that. I don't always do that, but, and thank God we did, especially on the wedding stuff. I think we found some gold there.
Yeah, no, it was great, man. No, it was really good fun. Thanks so much for getting in touch with me, bro.
So, Hit me up with the tell my Gen X fans that may not know about you. Tell them where to find you.
If you kind of want to access some kind of old millennial, kind of on the cusp of you guys, go at Tony Horror on Instagram.
Oh, that's right, Tony Horror.
Tony Horror on all the social. And I have a podcast called Tony Cantwell's Hit Show, and that comes out every Tuesday. And I have a Patreon where there's a bonus podcast for the price of a pint, and you can get 2 helpings of me.
What is it? Patreon.com/what? Tony Horror?
If you just look up Tony Cantwell on Patreon, you'll find me.
Classic. All right, man. Well, thanks so much.
Cheers, man.
I would have preferred to meet you in real life and get to know you without putting you to work, but it's been nice to get to know you on the pod.
No, it's cool. Well, look, if you're back and you're doing any of the festivals, you know, let me know.
Yeah, for sure, man. Thanks so much, man.
Cool. Cheers.
See you soon.
Take care.
Have a good one. Bye. So thanks, guys. Thanks, Tony. Do spread the word about the pod. I'm very excited because I've ordered some chicken parm, which is being delivered by Tonino's here in West Hampton. It's a night off. I've been gigging most nights. It's part of how I ended up missing last week's episode, doing a lot of stand-up. So this is my night off, and I'm waiting for the chicken parm. And then I think I'm going to watch Judas and the Black Messiah. So I hope you guys are doing something nice wherever you are. And we'll be back next week. I'm due a chat with Steve, waiting to get a hold of Steve. He's under pressure, end of year exams, and Aiden's back home, so we might try to get him on the pod one of these days soon. So have a good weekend, and we'll be back next week. Thank you so much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.